my calculations are correct, when this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
It's showtime.
Right, welcome everybody to another episode of the VHS Strikes Back. I am one of your hosts, Chris, and my co-host and very good friend is Dave.
Hey there, Chris, and hello to our listeners out there. Welcome to the VHS Strikes Back, the show where we dust off the old video player and go on a nostalgic journey to look at the good and the bad movies of yesteryear. Now, Chris, what are we going to review this week?
Well, Dave, it's my pick, my first pick of 2024. So I wanted to start with something reasonably good, you know, because I had a disastrous 2023 with movies stitching myself up. we're going for the third one in, the other films are not bad, actually. There's been four or five of them. I think there's been five, even six of them now. But anyway, Dave, we're going to complete the original trilogy of Die Hard. So we're doing Die Hard with a Vengeance from 1995. Somehow, you knew last week about this movie because you said something about, off the podcast, about like franchise finishing. And I'm like, how does he know I'm going to pick this movie? But anyway, it's on Disney Plus, if you've got Disney Plus, which coincidentally, Dave, I've just fucking cancelled because they can fucking do one $10.99 a month. I'm sorry, but yeah, That's now been cancelled. I've had to drop the news to my brother and his father-in-law and my sister and all the other fucking people who latch onto me and my streaming services. So that's now disappeared. So that's gone. But anyway, so John McClane is back, Dave. 1995. Where was the first time you watched this, or what do you remember of it?
You know, I've got a very Alzheimer's-like memory of this, Chris, because in my head, I remember playing the game of this, and I remember being in the New York cab and then having to drive around, you know, and find different, you know, puzzles and things. In my head, I'm like, oh, yeah, I had this on the Amiga. But the timeline does not stack up. I must have had this on the PlayStation or something, but it's weird. I'm really struggling to place this one. So I'd said last week, I wasn't sure if I'd actually watched the movie, but I do remember playing the game. I don't think I haven't seen this all the way through. And if I think about it, kind of 95, that was a bit of a black spot in my movie watching timeline. You know, I was a student at the time. Mondays to Thursdays, you know, out every night. It was Monday's rock night down at Arabella's. Tuesday was 50s, 60s, and 70s night at Tokyo Joe's. I think Wednesday was student night at Tokyo Joe's. Thursday was student night at the Student Union. So I had my week planned out, and then, you know, the rest of the weekend days, I was resting my liver. So I just didn't really watch many movies around this time. You know, I did study a little bit as well. But So this one just completely passed me by. And then I guess once it gets past the kind of, you know, it's not in the public consciousness. I think I started working in Blockbusters 96, I think it was. Was it 96 or 97? It had fallen out. It wasn't one of the newer releases then. It had already, you know, become old hat kind of thing. So, yeah, I just never actually seen this one. And when we were talking about it before the podcast, I was talking about things like Lethal Weapon 3, Beverly Hills Cop 3, and I kind of lumped in Die Hard 3 in my mind. You know, it's just being one of those franchise-killing movies. I have to say, Chris, I was probably wrong about that. I probably just, you know, unfairly lumped it in there without actually having ever actually seen it. So I'll give you all my thoughts as we go on. But yeah, I just completely passed me by this one, Chris. I mean, how about yourself?
Yeah, so for me, Dev, I think I watched it the day it came out on VHS. I bought this on VHS and I always liked it, but I've not watched it for a long time. It must be about 10, 15 years at least, you know, and it was a sort of regular in the sort of Die Hard, you know, you watch the Christmas one, you'd watch, you know, Die Hard 2, and then obviously I'd go with this one. And I always like this one. I always say the second one is my personal favourite. I watched it last week I watched it, and that's what sort of got me going to pick this, to be fair. But the first one's still absolute classic. The first and second are amazing movies. But I do remember, like, the start of it. I remember bits with Samuel L. Jackson. I remember like being in New York. And obviously this is the first time that John McClane's actually in the city where he's a cop officially, you know, he's actually was a New York cop. So that's the whole pretense. And I think more than anything, watching it now, it sounds silly, but the first two movies are very much, I suppose, in the vein of Beverly Hills Cop, where Axel Foley's Detroit cop, but goes to, you know, Hollywood, LA and all that, and does the whole thing, you know, Beverly Hills Cop and stuff. And then you've got that with McClane, especially the one when he's in like Dulles Tower in the second one in Washington and that, and you've got all that. And it, like, he hasn't got jurisdiction, but he just does it anyway. You know, very similar to what you see in Beverly Hills Cop. But yeah, I remember enjoying it. I know Jeremy Irons, Simon Gruber, they will have a bit of a chat about that. But it was always a movie that was just Die Hard. It just felt like Die Hard. Like, I probably should have done this before we did any of the second Die Hard. We did it for Christmas last year, Die Harder was Lethal Weapon 2. I've watched that so many times, Lethal Weapon 2, but then Lethal Weapon 3 I enjoy, even though for some people they don't. I enjoy the fourth one, which was like the last one. I probably should have done Lethal Weapon 2, really, as my pick. However, with this, I was like, no, let's do it. Let's get it on. And just to see what you think of it, because I was thinking, does it still hold up? You know, it's nearly 30 years old. I mean, I don't think John McClane's fucking Irish jig holds up very well, Dave, in this one. It's definitely a wig that John's wearing. But no, I was looking forward to it. And I'm looking forward to what you think, because there's plenty I think we're going to talk about, especially with Simon Says, Dave.
Well, Chris, should we get into our trailer?
Let's go.
Of a mastermind of terror.
I want to play a game with Lieutenant McClane.
What kind of game?
Simon Says.
The path to revenge leads straight to John McClane.
If we don't do what this guy says, he's going to blow up another public place.
Well, why me? What has he got to do with me?
I have no idea. He just said it had to be you.
It's nice to be needed.
Simon Says, get to the payphone in Wall Street Station by 10:20, or the number 3 train and its passengers vaporize.
I'm not jumping through hoops for some psycho. That's a white man with white problems. You deal with it.
Where the hell are you going, McClane? I know what I'm doing. Not even God knows what you're doing.
This guy wants to pound on you till you crumble.
Are you aiming for these people?
No. Well, maybe that mime.
He wants you to dance to his tune and then kill you.
Oh, dear.
You don't like me because I'm white.
I don't like you because you're going to get me killed.
Ah! On May 19th.
This is a bad idea. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm a New York police officer. I'm going to ask you to calmly and quietly start moving towards the other end of the car.
When the theater goes dark.
Trust me, guys.
Duck. The roof blows off.
Guy out there setting off bombs. And for some reason, he's very angry with me.
This, as they say, is where the plot thickens.
They knocked over the Federal Reserve.
Bruce Willis, Jeremy Irons, Samuel L. Jackson.
Congratulations, you're still alive.
Yippee-ki-yay, mother.
In a John McTiernan film, Die Hard, with a vengeance.
John McClane, NYPD.
Are you all right?
Yes, laundry day.
The Bonwit Teller department store in New York City is blown up by a bomb during the morning commute. A man identifying himself as Simon telephones the New York City Police Department, claiming responsibility and threatening to detonate another bomb unless policeman John McClane is sent to Harlem wearing a sandwich board with a racist slur on it. Now, Chris, what do you reckon to the opening of this movie?
Well, I love the start of this movie, Dave. I must admit, you've got the whole music, you know, Hat Down, Summer in the City, and then it just blows up, doesn't it? You've got New York. We've been New York ourselves a good few times. It's a working city. It can be lovely, but it can be grimy. They've got the whole thing going. You've got the steam coming out of, like, you know, the drains and all that stuff. And then it hits. And I must admit, it's quite eerie. Whenever you watch a movie now where there's this sort of thing, and knowing that, obviously, unfortunately, 9/11 happens a few years later. It's always interesting seeing how these movies were made. And I know that there was the Boston bombings as well. People worried about, like, when they made the movie, that there was, unfortunately, bombings in Boston. Would this sit right?
Was it Boston? You know, I thought it was the Oklahoma bombing was
Oklahoma,
about a month before this one.
Sorry, Oklahoma. I think the Boston was that. Ignore that,
American,
Dave.
Wasn't it? Years and years later.
Chris's statistics as usual there. But yeah, anyway, let's move on, Dave. But anyway, so I always wonder, and seeing like how the city has changed and everything. But that start is perfect. The one thing that always pisses me off though is that in the other two diehards, he's like, the first one, he's trying to save his marriage because, like, obviously Holly has gone in Nakatomi Plaza. She's a career woman. You've got fucking Ellis there wanting to get his end away with her and all this fucking shit. And then the second one, they're in love, aren't they? And he saves her on the plane and she, you know, she chins the reporter who's not in this one, funny enough. But then this one, his whole life's gone to shit again, and he's an alcoholic, isn't he? You know, like, he's been fucking banned from the police. He's on suspension. But I do like it. I love the start. And I never realised, only reading up on the stats, but when he gets dropped in Harlem with the racist boredom, which apparently was actually CGI, Dave, because they couldn't put that on because they were actually worried when they filmed in Harlem, people would think it was a real, you know, like a real thing, and he could get attacked. I never knew that. And then in other films, it says something else, like, I hate everybody. But that whole scene, he says, within 4 minutes, I'm going to be dead. And it's actually 4 minutes before the gang see him. So from John McClane getting dropped off on the corner to Zeus's nephews coming in saying, you need to have a look at this guy, to him then coming out to say to him, you need to get the hell out of here. That's actually 4 minutes exactly until they basically chin him and he's about to get killed. So I never knew that, but I do love the start of it.
Yeah, I mean, certainly with the bomb, it comes straight into it, doesn't it? And it took me a few minutes to get my bearings, and I was like, you know what? Like I say, I remember the, you know, driving around Central Park and stuff. I must have caught these from trailers, though, these memories that I have, because I've definitely not seen this. And this is not an age thing, you know. I have definitely not seen it. But, Chris, I was watching it this time, you know, like I say, for the first time. And if I had watched it, I'd definitely forgotten it. And you've alluded to it there, actually, before we got into the trailer, I think. In the first two, he's that fish out of water, isn't he? He's a New York cop, but he's somewhere else, you know. So in the first one, he's in LA. In the second one, he's in Washington. And he's just kind of on his day off kind of thing, or, you know, his time out. He basically gets caught up in this thing. And so he's reacting to everything. Whereas this one, he's in his home environment. He's on his home turf. And there was something that just, it didn't feel like Die Hard to me. So started to read up on it. And sure enough, like the other movies, this was a script, like just a standalone script that had been doing the rounds in Hollywood. And Bruce Willis had rejected various scripts that had come up because they were just rehashing the first two. You know, they probably were on that theme of a fish out of water. Whereas this one, it was doing the rounds. And then it got rewritten to be initially a Lethal Weapon movie.
Yeah.
And then, you know, after that, it got, you know, it got into the hands of the right people, and then it sort of becomes a Die Hard movie. And I guess watching it this time, I'm thinking, like, you know, John McClane he's almost like Remo Williams, isn't he? Or he's like, well, actually, I think the first half of this is almost like Batman going up against the Riddler. That's how I was watching it this time. He's just that superhero before the MCU started to dominate cinema. So yeah, that was my first feeling, was, okay, this isn't what I recognize as Die Hard. It's not a traditional trilogy, you know, where it wraps up something. It's just a standalone script, standalone story where you have this hero, you know, this comic book hero, John McClane, just dropped in the middle of there. So, yeah, I thought it was interesting. I think the fact that, you know, there's no messing about, you're straight into there. I was a bit fucking shocked, if I'm honest, you know, when he gets dropped off and you see what's on his sandwich board, it's like, fucking hell, you know?
Yeah.
And obviously you get the interaction, you can see Zeus, can't you? Talking to the kids, he's trying to bring them up right, you know, study at school, you know, who are the bad people, who are the good people and stuff like that. And what I don't buy, though, is John McClane is stood about 20 yards away from these blokes. Zeus can have this whole conversation, you know, the kids point out, you know, the fact that he's stood there. All the while, the guys are 20 yards away, not seeing him. Suddenly, Zeus goes to speak to him. Now, in the eye line, from where those guys are stood, Zeus is stood in front of the sandwich boards. But suddenly, yeah, they can see around him and see what he's got written on the sandwich boards. And then you get the whole kind of kickoff and stuff. So, you know, I know I'm picking nits straight away there, but... yeah, I just thought that was a bit off, but it was still interesting where you have these two kind of characters put together. And I do have to say as well, you know, so this was after Pulp Fiction, wasn't it? So he'd already, Samuel L. Jackson had already sprung to prominence, and apparently Lawrence Fishburne was negotiating his salary for this. A bit like last week when we said about Charles Dance being cheaper than Alan Rickman. You know, basically Samuel L. Jackson was cheaper than Lawrence Fishburne. And so Lawrence Fishburne ended up suing the studio because that was supposed to be his role, apparently. But after, you know, the producers saw him in Pulp Fiction, they were like, oh, we need this Samuel L. Jackson character. And I do have to say, I think he plays a brilliant role because he is not the fucking sidekick. You know, he, for me, is shoulder to shoulder with McClane, and he's not taking any shit from anyone.
No, and it's funny you say Lawrence Fishburne. He must have hated Samuel L. Jackson in the 90s because I think he wanted him up for the role in Pulp Fiction, and then Samuel L. Jackson got it as well. So I'm sure that's what we want, some of the research. But I'm with you on this. So I'm going to nitpick on it, Dave, definitely, because one thing that always bugged me is the fucking police supporting cast are awful. You've got the captain with the moustache, who's fucking, he's absolute wet lettuce. The other guy who looks Latino, he's actually okay. He's like the sergeant or whatever. He seems to have a bit of steel behind him. The girl who looks like fucking Harpo Marx with that fucking weird wig just looks completely out of place. And then you've got the geeky guy who almost looks like that guy out of Jurassic Park, who's the bomb disposal, but they're all dead weak. Like, gee, he's going, Charlie, you know, the captain doesn't deliver. For New York, you needed the captain like we watched in Last Action Hero, didn't you?
Yeah.
You know, that sort of like no messy, no bullshit captain who is shouting, telling everyone, I'm the boss, you respect me. He's popping at McClane, but he knows that McClane will get the job done. Whereas I've always had a problem with the captain more than anything, and that weird woman with the Harpo Marx haircut. I don't know what that fucking curly wig's all about at all. She's so unconvincing. How she must have been related to the fucking John McTiernan or something. I don't know how she ended up in the movie. She's fucking awful. But what always bugs me about this movie is I love John McClane and Zeus, Samuel L. Jackson, Bruce Willis, fantastic as a together. It's almost like Lethal Weapon, in it. The dialogue, they bounce off each other. He's a fucking hardware store owner, right, in Harlem. There's no backstory. Like if we'd started the movie off that, you know, Zeus is some fucking ex-Vietnam veteran, and, you know, he gets injured in duty, and we get, you know, like a little bit of a drop, or the two nephews walk into the shop and they go, oh, Uncle, I've seen you've got your medals out again, or, you know, just some little bit of a breadcrumb to go, hang on a minute, this fucking guy's got a little bit about him. No, he's a hardware store owner who sees this, you know, this racist slur. He goes out, McClane says, I'm a cop. His two nephews are still around about these gangbangers anyway. But then he decides to jump in the car with him And for even though he knows it's about, like, he said to him, like, the leave his store, and he says, my store's going to, his two nephews are in there, so what's happening to them? And then he goes on this fucking adventure with him, don't he, from nowhere. And I'm not being funny, Dave. We all like to think that we'd be superheroes and that we'd, you know, if something like that happened, you'd be the first one to step up. But we've got fucking families, you know, it's like, unless you were in a corner where you were like, it's me or you, we've got to fight to the death, or we've got, I've got to get away from this. I've got to, somehow I don't want to be in this situation. I want to get back to my family. I don't want my kids being orphaned or whatever. Fair enough. But no, he just goes on it. And I don't think it's a bad thing, because I think Samuel L. Jackson, he's fucking brilliant in this. I think he steals the movie from being on it. I think he's excellent in this movie. But them leaps are bullshit. And then, the bit where obviously they meet Simon and he's with him and he's going, oh, you've got a new friend there, McLean, and all this. And I think Jeremy Irons fucking Hans Gruber accent is fucking bobbins. Simon's there. It's bobbins. But I do love the bit where he's got to get like 15 blocks and there's a line that he says, McLean, I've always loved that about this movie. And he says to him, he goes, how are you going to do it? He goes, it's like, a quarterback, you know, and all this. And he gets the ambulance, doesn't he? And they're chasing the ambulance. But
chasing the linebacker, I think he says something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, linebacker. I love that. I love that whole interaction to get across New York. But what gets me is, Dave, when they split up, is how easy it is to lift up a drain and jump on an underground fucking drain in New York. McLean just comes up, picks the fucking drain up and goes, this is a bad idea, and jumps straight on the fucking subway fucking truck. Now, I'm not being, you know how bad New York is for crime in that, Dave. Surely any fucking person would just be picking these drains up, wouldn't they, and jumping on the fucking train. That is one of, watching it now, it is utterly ridiculous. But as you've said, it's an MCU movie before, because McLean, once that vest is on show, it's like fucking Superman. He is indestructible, John McLean. Fucking brilliant. And he's got the dad bod as well, which I always respect about Bruce Willis. You know, he's never ripped up, is he? He's just in about shape, and he's in 20-minute cardio in the gym shape sort of thing with a couple of 10K dumbbells, Dave. But it works, doesn't it? It works. But I love McLean. I love this movie, but there's loads of things watching it now where you're like, fuck off, I'm not having that. So anyway, I've had a bit of a rant. Brilliant.
I guess I feel like there is some backstory that could have been there for Zeus, but I felt like, you know, particularly with the style of glasses that he was wearing, I don't know if they were channeling like a Malcolm X type thing. You know, he quite looked like Malcolm X, or Denzel Washington playing Malcolm X. I wasn't sure if they were going for that. Had they said that, though, you know, about his history, you know, about his medals or something, that wouldn't explain that he was so shit at using a gun later on. You know, when he has the fucking safety on. So, you know, and I loved it when, you know, because you have a bit of this back and forth, don't you, about the racism and whatever. And he says about giving him the gun, he's like, well, not all of us can, or not all black people can shoot guns, you racist motherfucker. Just something about Samuel L. Jackson's delivery is just fucking awesome. But this movie, right, it's a bit of a funny one. It's almost, for me, this is almost two different movies. The first bit, like I say, honestly, I could see Adam West and Robin, you know, Adam West Batman and Robin, Burt Ward, running around New York City trying to solve these puzzles, you know, to Simon's instructions. That for me is the first half of the movie. And then the second half of the movie, it's almost like a heist movie. You know, you haven't seen all of the planning section, but you're seeing the execution of the heist. And, you know, John McClane and Zeus are trying to, like, foil them and stuff. But it's just interesting. It's almost, I didn't look at the timer, but it does almost switch. It's like two movies glued together. Because, I mean, a lot of the running around that they do, it's pretty much fucking useless, really, wasn't it, in the end? It was just a wild goose chase to try and keep him occupied while they're trying to steal all the gold. So, yeah, I wasn't expecting to see that when it came into the movie.
Yeah, and I agree with that, to be fair, because I think it feels very familiar. And if you strip the movie back, the script is pretty much the first movie, isn't it? You know, they're in a building. They've basically, they're after getting into that vault, aren't they, in the Nakatomi Plaza. This is the same thing, but McClane's used as a distraction. It's this, you know, hands groove. They knew that the FBI would say, well, you know who this guy is, don't you? And when he says his name's Peter Krieg, but then it's like, you know, it's Simon Peter Gruber. And then it feels as if he's after McClane then. And it's not. It's a distraction tactic. But the police are so fucking stupid. John McClane says to the captain, you do know that the fucking national, you know, the vaults down there and everything, all the gold and everything. And he's like, yeah, yeah, but there's bombs in the schools. And so we said, fair enough, you've got to do it. But he's like, no, this is what this is about. It's a distraction tactic. And he still doesn't buy it, does he, the fucking captain? And with you, I think, like, when they're driving the taxi and he goes through Central Park and everything, that's brilliant. Like, say, Samuel L. Jackson's fucking one-liners, the delivery. Nobody, Lawrence Fishburne, as much as he's a great actor, love him as Morpheus, he hasn't got that delivery. Like, Samuel L. Jackson is a perfect foil for McClane. He stands no bullshit off him. But then you see, as the movie goes, even within the first few interactions, there's that respect, isn't there? Like, McClane saying to him, we need to split up. You go one way, I go another. And then, like you say, we get the heist thing. But again, like, you know, I watched Die Hard 2 the other day and it still makes me piss how when they're fucking blowing up that jumbo jet he's on, they throw three grenades in the fucking cab and he's still got time to look around, get on the ejector seat, fasten his seatbelt and get in the air before they blow up. You know what I mean? I mean, I love the intensity and even now when I watch it, there's still that fear of like, oh my God, is he going to get out? Even I watched it, but it's so far-fetched, that bit. And then in this, some of the bits, I mean, they said that when they're chasing him and obviously there's a bit where they get back together, you know, Zeus and McClane, and they're in the car, and then they go off, and then McClane ends up fucking underwater, and then of all the places, you know, big New York is, of all the places, Zeus is driving past as McClane comes out the fucking drain 30 foot in the air, doesn't he, and lands in the water perfectly. There's so many of these, like, that is utter bullshit. That is bollocks, but it goes with the movie. But yeah, there's some really far-fetched shit in this movie, which is comical. Sorry.
Do you know what I think? I honestly, I feel like if you shot this in the 60s with Batman and Robin, I think it would fit perfectly.
Yeah.
And none more so than with the water jug puzzle. So you've got this 5-liter jug and this 3-liter jug, but you have to basically put it on this balance. So you have to put exactly 4 liters. You know, you can't guess it. You can't half-ass it because, you know, the weighting device would, if you put the wrong weight on, you know, it'd trigger the bomb. I was like, fucking hell, this is a Riddler sort of thing, you know, and Batman would be discussing it with Robin, you know, how would they do it? But they were like discussing it, and then they got to within about 20 seconds or something, and then they just blurted out these words, and then, oh yeah, yeah, we can do this, we can do this. It didn't explain it for me. So I ended up fucking, you know what I'm like, Chris, so I ended up like trying to work it out. I'm like, how the fuck would you do that? So what do you think of that particular scene?
Well, I'm with you, and I'll tell you why that's very prominent. You've just said the Riddler and Batman, because I have been playing the Arkham series for the first time ever, Dev. I don't know why I never played them. And I've finished Arkham Asylum. I've completed the story mode in Arkham City. But luckily, I've got them on PC. So I'm playing them on my Steam Deck and I'm playing them on my PC. So I'm sort of flicking between and I'm sat there and it's driving Sam mad. But I tell you what, Dave, the one thing I've not done in either fucking game is any of the fucking Riddler things. If I can put the Riddler fucking question mark up and I've just got to like open a door, that's fine. But when all that dialogue comes on and it's like, you know, it's almost like a Cantona riddle. When the seagull follows the trawler and I'm like, oh, fuck off. I am not looking around the room or whatever I'm supposed to do. So stuff like that, even though you can be quite perceptive, I'm usually quite good at solving stuff like that. I think as I'm getting older, I just can't be fucking arsed. I'm just like, I don't give a fuck. My head, I've got better things to be doing than trying to work this shit out. And sometimes it'll just come to me. With that, I still don't understand it. I get it by the end of it, but even then when I'm watching it again this time, I'm like, fuck off. This would do my chin, especially the time scale.
We'd all be dead. And in that, under that time pressure, I we'd all be dead as well. I'd be fucked. But Chris, I spent probably as much time trying to figure this thing out that actually researching the movie. It's one of those things that just caught me. Now, do you want me to take you through it?
Yes, please, because I still to this day don't get it properly.
Right, so you've got your 5-litre jug and you've got your 3-litre jug, and you want to end up with 4 litres, plus the weight of the container, I guess. So what you need to do, you fill up your 5-litre jug, so it's full of water, you've got 5-litre jug, you've got 5 litres of water in it. You pour 3 litres into the 3-litre container. So you've got 3 litres in your 3-litre jug, and you've got 2 litres in your 5-litre jug. You throw away the 3-litre jug water, so that's now empty. You pour your 2 litres into the 3-litre jug, so that's now got 2 litres in, and your 5-litre jug is empty. You fill up your 5-litre jug again, so it's got 5 litres in, and your 3-litre jug has got 2 litres in. You pour your 1 litre out of your 5-litre jug into the 3 litres, and you're left with 4 in your 5-litre jug there.
Fuck me.
But we would all be dead. It took me fucking ages.
I was going to say, and that makes perfect sense, to be fair. I'm sat here like, you know that is it Philip C, whatever he's called, that fucking, the things are above my head now, the equations, you know that fucking meme where the guy's got the glasses on, the curly hair, that fucking actor, comedian. But it's weird, and none of you got that one, how many people were going to St. Ives? And I'm like, oh, fuck off. This is the sort of shit you used to when I was in primary school. I don't care. But it adds a little bit of jeopardy to the movie, doesn't it? Because then, this is how Zeus has got to remain, because he's part of it, and they're trying to... McClane lies, doesn't he, about, where the bomb is and all this stuff, because he's got to keep him, because Holland, he knows... Yeah, because he's saying, I've got to keep you. So that makes sense for the movie. I just wish, just slightly stepping back, there was a little bit of something that Samuel L. Jackson was a badass, because let's be honest, yes, these bits with the guns, stuff like that, and like you say, some of the lines are brilliant about the stereotype, with guns and all that, and it's really funny what he says to McClane, but he then becomes like fucking an acrobat, doesn't he? So he's talking about Batman, he's almost like fucking Dick Grayson, he's part of the Grayson's fucking acrobats, because... he looks about 50 in this, doesn't he? Or he's perceived to be late 40s, 50-odd Zeus. But he still holds his own, doesn't he? I mean, the bits where... the fucking boat, where they're on the zip thing, they've got the hoist off the fucking 4x4, and they've got that, and they're going across. And that is proper Batman. It's such a good thing you mentioned in Batman. That is a Batman and Robin 1966 in it, and the Joker's at one end with a pair of scissors going, oh, I'm going to fucking cut you down. And then Batman goes, don't worry, Robin, and luckily I've got this special wings I've put into our utility belts. It's a prototype, but we'll survive, and they fly off. It was so much stupid. But apparently that actual truck flew off the side. That was a genuine, proper stunt. They still used the truck to fly off the side. But laws of physics, Dave, again, laws of physics. What idea would you want to put a hoist and a million in one chance the hoist just accidentally hooks on? Let's hope it gets it, and it hooks on. And then even me, who's not a scientist or anybody, would go, that boat is moving at a bit of a way. Even though it's a big ship, it's moving. How fucking long was the hoist on that before? It's just ridiculous. It's ridiculous, the time scale and the physics of it, the fucking hoist on the van, on the 4x4. It's utter bollocks. But again, they land in as if they're in a pillar or something. They land in some fucking bed of feathers, don't they? It's just, I find as it goes on, that Jeremy Irons, his character, becomes more camper, more ridiculous. It doesn't, I don't know, it just doesn't make any sense. And the haircut is he says it himself, Jeremy Irons, everyone said it was Simon was going through a midlife crisis. They're trying to make him hipper, aren't they? But he just looks really bizarre. It looks, for me, he looks like fucking Julian Clary, if I'm being honest, Dave. He just looks proper. He does.
I tell you what, though, when they were jumping on that boat, there was a guy who got killed, and it was kind of like, a little bit, it was on the screen for a split second, but he gets cut in half, doesn't he? I thought, you know, normally with these things, you know, someone gets shot and they, you know, that's brutal enough. But I mean, the actual getting cut in half, I thought that was like horror movie stuff. A great sort of, probably the best kill out of this one. But yeah, I felt like it was a little bit weird in a Die Hard movie.
Yeah, but then, and you're right, it is, because you see the body split, but then he carries him, doesn't he? Very clever. There's obviously two extras on the floor, but then McClane's like, you get the fucking legs, I'll get the head. And they're pulling the body, aren't they? It's decapitated, like, and hiding it. I mean, I don't think it would have mattered, because the fucking blood was obviously everywhere. But again, even the henchman, the big guy who's with the blonde woman, and they're double crossing, like, all of them. So they took 140 billion, haven't they, in these trucks, and they're trying to find out who the 21st president is of America, and they don't know. And then McClane and Zeus go after one of the trucks, because they realize that they've mentioned at the start 14 dump trucks have been nicked, haven't they? Nobody questions when 14 dump trucks turn round the corner when the police are there. And then Jeremy Irons turns up with this weird Texas accent, doesn't he, away from the building department. Oh, you got here quick and all this. And nobody questions him at all. One of my favourite scenes, just off the back of that, though, Dave, is when they're in the lift. McClane goes in the lift with the two fake coppers, doesn't he? And you've got the big copper as well, the big guy. And then he sees that it's sort of like the German or Russian guy's took the badge of one of his, of a cop who he knows. And then he kills, it's almost Captain America, isn't it, in the lift, but he shoots all three of them.
Yeah, I know, it totally is, and I it's funny watching it, you know, this way around, where you've seen Captain America Winter Soldier and the whole lift scene, and then I saw this and I was like, huh, they must have totally stolen that for Captain America. It's so similar. Obviously, you know, it's a bit more fucking brutal, isn't it? And I watch it now and I'm like, I don't really understand why the guy doesn't shoot him. He's literally got the gun in McClane's midriff. I definitely got Captain America vibes from that bit.
Yeah, and you know what, Dave? It's funny, and I agree, completely agree. That's the first thing I thought. But McClane, he doesn't shoot McClane. Because at first I was like, why is he not shooting? When you look, McClane's got one to his throat. So you don't see it till the last second. You know, when he's saying, put the gun, don't shoot, or whatever McClane's saying, he's actually got a gun to the guy's neck, like there, or his throat. And that's where why there's that bit of like, of a Russian standoff, but it does look weird at first. It's like, he's just killed three people. Why wouldn't he shoot you? Because you're going to kill him, you know. But I do like Bruce Willis when McClane's vulnerable, when he's like that, when he looks like he doesn't just get up like he's, you know, he's untouched like a superhero movie. I think Bruce Willis is very good at playing that. He's just got that, he's got almost like a pluckiness and a will not to die. And that's obviously Die Hard. But he does know what I mean. When he's not the toughest, he's not, but he's got this inner toughness about himself where he won't back down from people and that. And when that scene and they all fall out the lift and he's like panicking, isn't he? You can imagine the PTSD afterwards, even though he's seen it, been there, got the t-shirt. I don't know. There's always something I like about him when he's playing McClane, when he has these vulnerable bits where he sort of killed people, but he doesn't really want to do it. Whereas you look at, like, I watched Lethal Weapon the other day, Martin Riggs, and he just fucking takes everybody out. There is no fucking bother. He'll just kill any fucker, you know, gets in his way. But you know what I mean? I do like that portrayal of McClane when he brings that into the movies.
You know, I need to watch Lethal Weapon again soon. I missed it this Christmas, but, you know, I always think of the bit where he just starts legging it off down the highway.
I still laugh at that. I love it. It's back. It's fucking legging it. And Murtaugh's going, the freeway. He's gone on the freeway. And it's like, he's driving a fucking Audi or something at that point. Or a bit later on. It's like, why are you going to, you're not going to catch him. It's ridiculous. Yeah. I know the traffic's bad in LA, but fuck me. Yeah, I mean, it's like fucking Mel Gibson's an Olympic sprinter and Martin fucking Riggs is some fucking Olympic fucking triathlete. Usain Bolt. Fucking brilliant.
But I do think that is one of the consistent things, isn't it, with John McClane, that, you know, he's not this superhero. I mean, you put it in real life and obviously he would be out on his feet, but yeah, having him kind of injured and then carrying that through to the next scene. Chris, we haven't mentioned it for a little while now, but No Retreat, No Surrender 3, when Lauren Avedon gets shot in the arm. But then after that, he's like chasing a truck like nothing's happened. You know, he's just got a bit of red on his shirt. It's just brilliant. And, you know, it's funny watching this one so quickly after Last Action Hero, because there are a few things that came out. I mean, I agree. I feel like that set my expectation for the angry captain. And so watching this kind of more placid captain was weird. When one of the puzzles was to dial the right number, wasn't it? But the number started with 555.
Yeah.
You know, there's some things that just came out. And obviously, you know, when Arnie gets shot, you know, it's like, oh, we need to get him in the movie, and it's just a flesh wound then. So yeah, it sort of made me think of that when John McClane's getting more and more beat up. And I do feel like, you know, again, you've got to put your action movie glasses on, haven't you, to kind of embrace the fact that, no, in real life he would be just fucked. He'd have to give up the game. Also, sorry to jump around a little bit, but do you not feel like at the start, even getting John McClane to do this stunt in the middle of Harlem, the police kind of gave up the game a little bit? You know, you hear the line, don't you, like, oh, we don't negotiate with terrorists, quite a lot. You know, through decades and decades, people will say that line. But now these guys are just like, well, the terrorists asked us to do it, so we got to do it. It's just a bit of a easy pushover there. But yeah, so getting back to your point, I do think that, you know, having John McClane vulnerable, you know, is the thing that sets him apart from all the other kind of action heroes that came before.
Yeah, 100%, because you get the baggage, don't you? He's obviously an alky now. What his wife has left in the family. You know, you don't really mention the kids in this one. If you watch, I know you went and watched Die Hard 4, which I've got on Blu-ray. I need to watch it again. Die Hard 5, I think. Have you watched 5 with his son?
Yeah.
Him who's, he's fingering, boomeranging it.
Jay, what's his name? Jay.
Yeah, Jay. Captain Boomerang, isn't he? In fucking Suicide Squad.
Jay Garrett, is it?
Yeah, I think it is, yeah, Jay Garrett. Because he's the one, I watched that on a dodgy copy and all the fucking Russian subtitles were in it. So we're watching it, Sam's going, what the fuck are they saying? And I'm going, so I'm then being a smart ass and I ad-libbing it. And then she's going, you're a dick. But
Jay Courtney.
Ah, Jay Courtney, yeah, that's him. And but yeah, so what I don't get though, Dave, about like the movies, when they get on the ship and then it becomes the big guy who's almost like Carl out of the first one. He's actually an American actor. He's about 6'4", isn't he? And then he has the fight with McClane. McClane stabs him in the fucking leg, doesn't even flinch, Dave. This guy is just, you know, as usual. These like European guys apparently are impervious to pain, aren't they? There's just nothing. They're on a different level to anybody.
Fucking thing in the leg. It's just ridiculous. It's just, it's a spine.
It's a flesh wound. He's going, hey, little man, and all this. And he's throwing him round. And very much like when, you know, they had to fight with Carl in the first one. And it's that B.A. Baracus of punch him in the face and he just doesn't even flinch, does he? And then he's throwing McClane round the air and all this. And then he realises he's been double-crossed. He doesn't know that his girlfriend is actually with fucking Simon at this point. Mm. But he's basically, one of his oppos has said to him, what the fuck's going on here? And then they realise it's all full of lead in it and everything. And when he does kill him and then McClane goes after like Simon and fucking, you know, you get that weird sex scene, which apparently John McTiernan threw in the movie because it was an R-rated movie. So we thought, fuck it, let's have a sex scene, which completely goes against anything in the movie.
But surely the guy getting cut in half would have been enough for the R-rating.
For the R, yeah, yeah. So yeah, that's true. But then that whole twist is bollocks. But then it's like the fight with Simon, you know, the way they get away. And obviously the ship blows up again, the escape, don't they, Dave? But what's always bugged me about these movies, in the first one, right, and this one's more apparent, they've stolen $140 billion worth of gold bullion, right? They've got 14 dump trucks with all this stuff in, and now they move it, don't they? And we find out where it really is, right? how are they expected to live a life of luxury? Now, Simon's going to, he's actually dipping everyone who's in the gang. He's not giving them the money. It's only him and this woman. But I always think, well, you wouldn't be, I don't care how good the black market is and how like these dodgy things are, you would not be able to get away with all that bullying. There's no like plan to it, is there really? It's just purely for the movie. Like, I know I'm overthinking this like in real life, but I'm not thinking you're not going to be able to get away with living a life on a fucking island that you've bought, because someone's going to go, oh, how has this person appeared? No matter how good you get forged passports or anything. I don't know. It just, the idea behind it makes no fucking sense at all, does it?
Yeah, I still think it plays into my Batman theory. You know, if you think this is the Joker and the Riddler's, you know, plans, and they escape with the money, end movie. But yeah, I must admit, I ended up wondering about that myself, because if it was me and you, and someone accidentally just dropped, you know, out of the sky or something, and you've got a whole bunch of fucking gold bullion in the middle of your garden or something, you'd be like, well, what the fuck am I going to do with that? You couldn't actually do a lot with it, could you?
No. But, and the weight.
Yeah, definitely the weight. But I guess they hint to his kind of previous military, and they're all a bunch of mercenaries, aren't they? So you'd imagine they've got contacts to lots of kind of terrorist organizations and stuff. So they would probably be able to shift that, I would think.
Yeah, but possibly. It's like you were saying, like about the, you did the riddle, you know, the liters and all that. That was the one thing that always bugs me. I'm sat there thinking, well, this just wouldn't happen, would it? But I can't seem got a fucking cash converter and dropping the bullion in there, you know, taking a bar in every week. How is he going to give me for this, mate? Yeah, cash for gold. How is he going to give me for this, pal? £3.50. Oh, all right, then I'll take it. Yeah, it just doesn't make sense. But I do think at the end, what's bollocks is when they get away, McLean thinks he's going to get away. There is an alternative ending, isn't there, where Simon gets away, McLean gets fucking booted off the floor. I've never seen it. I'm going to have to watch it on YouTube, but apparently it's on the Region 1 DVDs, and that was the original ending, and McLean gets booted off the force and all this stuff, but then he ends up tracking Simon down and does McLean Says with him or something, and they have a rocket launcher face off and all this fucking bollocks. So I need to watch that. It's supposed to be nonsense.
Yeah, so it's interesting. They describe it as an alternate ending. But this was the ending that was shot first. So the ending for me is not great. Obviously, we've had a laugh about some of the nonsense of it. And there is so much nonsense in this movie. But it is definitely enjoyable. But the way they wanted to end it was, you know, it was basically going to be like 20 years after. And it was this whole, like, McLean Says or, you know, Simon Says sort of thing. And he'd taken the sight off the end of the rocket launcher. So it's like a Russian roulette type thing where you're supposed to shoot out of it, but you don't know which end is which. I don't know quite. I've never shot a rocket launcher before, but I would have thought it would have been obvious. But apparently it's not. And so, yeah, Simon ends up getting killed. Now, the studio rejected it because they said, well, that's kind of a cruel thing for him to do. And, you know, it's not really like McLean. McLean's more of a defensive, you know, he ends up in these situations and he has to step up and be that hero. Whereas this is more of a calculated thing, you know, to actually kill Simon off. But I was thinking, well, I'm not sure I buy that, studio. I think you're already thinking, well, what if we want to make more movies about McLean? We've just literally, you know, tied ourselves up in knots and said, well, he's got to end up in this place, you know, 20 years into the future. Now, I'm a bit disappointed that they didn't stick with that, because it's kind of like it would have got you thinking more, and it maybe would have soured some people's view on John McLean. But you're thinking like, well, he's already descended, hasn't he, into alcoholism, you know, and I got to say, Chris, one of the unbelievable things as well. So, you know, McLean's got a headache, I guess a bit of a hangover headache throughout the whole movie. Simon just happens to have like a whole bunch of paracetamol in his pocket. But, you know, if you think in 20 years, in the future, you kind of think about the way that he's descended even further. So, yeah, he was this heroic guy who did these heroic things. But, you know, life has kind of ground him down and, you know, Simon fucked him up so much and he got away scot-free, you know, so it's been playing on his mind. He's been kicked off the force and everything. For me, that would have been so much more of a better thought-provoking ending.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that because, and I think what you described is right. McClane becomes the hero because he has to, doesn't he? He sees something's not right. Like watching the second one the other day when he comes across it in the airport, them two guys are having a chat. He's just sat there waiting for Holly and he notices like the cops are oblivious and they're like swapping like briefcases and looking round and they're doing things. And he's like, something's going on here. You know, it's like police instinct sort of thing. But I'm with you. I think as well, Dave, it's one of them. It's almost like, just finish it off where it is, because the ending we get where he shoots the overhead wire, I mean, he finds out where Simon is because he gets migraines. Now, he faked a stutter, didn't he, originally? And he says he's got a stutter, and then McClane's like, but he hasn't got a stutter. But then it's the aspirin because he has migraines, because when they're in the truck and Simon's in the truck with that big henchman and his missus, he's like rubbing his eye, isn't he, migraine style and all this. And because the fucking, it was bought at a truck stop in Quebec, that's how they find him. I mean, come on, fuck me. And then it's when McClane, though, shoots the fucking overhead wire. Now, Martin Riggs says, you know, maybe three or four people in the world could have shot a guy from 1,000 yards in Louth, you know, with high wind and all this stuff, you know. And so you know, like, Martin Riggs is the man. You see him on the gun range doing the smiley face thing and all that stuff. And, you know, and he basically doesn't miss, you know, he's headshot dead sort of thing. And McClane's not that. He's a good, you know, he can shoot and he's killed people, but he's that. The chances of hitting that wire to hit the helicopter again, the fuck, we might as well, he's so much superheroes, you might as well call him Deadshot Dave, you know, before Will Smith, like the fucking bullshit in it. And then he goes, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker, which is still a great line, one of the greatest lines in movies for me. But that again, utter nonsense. And you don't really get the payoff because you want McClane really to kill Simon in a one-to-one fight, don't you? Get the better of him eventually, even though he does get dicked late, earlier on. I sort of wanted that. It's a bit of a weird ending again. That's a bit of a cheap ending for me.
I agree. I think the ending's really rushed. You know, I mean, talk about convoluted. Like I say, you've got a gun. I mean, I think he had line of sight. He could have just shot Simon, I'm pretty sure, instead.
Yeah.
If he can actually shoot the fucking cable, he can shoot Simon.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so for me, it seemed like a little bit rushed. And, you know, I did get, like I was saying about Batman, but also a bit of a James Bond villain kind of feel to it as well. Yeah. I think from this, you know, and so I don't know, maybe just shooting him wouldn't have been satisfying enough, so you have to have this spectacular kind of ending. But yeah, for me it's a weird choice. Now I will say, you know, I enjoyed the movie as a whole, but yeah, for me the ending does fall a bit flat.
No, that's a good way to go into that, Dave, as well. So shall we get into our scores, Dave?
Let's go.
So, Dave, obviously I picked it. You know, we've had a right laugh. It's going to make me tickle this. That fucking 3 litre, 5 litre things just baffles my head. I'm so glad you explained it. It was just nonsense. But
Could you I'd have been it, thought, that's the question.
Dave, Dave, this, yeah, well, no. And this movie came out in 1995, and fucking 28 years later, I'd probably still be sat here trying to work that out. We would have been well in heaven with fucking God, fucking drinking Jack Daniels or something. We'd be dead. But no, I am with you. I thoroughly enjoy this movie. It feels like Die Hard. It's within the world. I love John McClane. He's one of my favorite action heroes. It's ridiculous again. You know, the white vests on, it's brilliant. He puts it on and that's his armor, really, more than anything. As I say, I love the vulnerability of the character of McClane. You know, he isn't like indestructible. He's not the Terminator. But because I'm watching Thing at the moment, I'm watching Reacher at the moment, series two, which is phenomenal. But also, Alan Rickman, who plays him, he's 6'3", he's supposed to be 6'5" as Reacher. He's not the Tom Cruise. Dave, he's not really had a fight where he's got levered off someone because he's so fucking big, you know, like, but I love the series. It's one of my favorite series. I'd recommend watching it. This 5-episode series two, it's a great show. I really, really enjoy it. But with this, McClane, he has that, if you're going to fight someone to the death, they've got to be bigger than you. They've got to be twice the size of you. They've got to have something about them that makes them tougher, you know, and I buy all that with this. I get that. But some of the stuff is nonsense. Zeus, there's no way Zeus would have just fucking decided to become a cop for the day and fucking solve this fucking massive fucking, as you say, sort of heist that's going on. But it is a great movie for me. So I'm going to put it at Hill Valley, I think, Dave, right in the middle, top half of Hill Valley, almost put it into Pleasantville. And I would definitely watch this again without doubt, because it is a great movie. It's just stupid. For the purpose of what we do on the podcast, it's made me piss watching some of the nonsense and Jeremy Irons' fucking accent is awful. But anyway, but there you go. So what about yourself, Dave?
So I am surprised, especially given this was your pick. I thought this was going to Pleasantville, but I enjoyed this way more than I thought I was going to enjoy it. I don't know where I've got that perception that Die Hard 3 is not very good. And like I say, the fact that I haven't watched it is probably just more to do with me and where I was in my life in and around that time when it would have been on, certainly the cinema and later on video. Yeah, I guess it took me a while to get my bearings, good sort of 10, 20 minutes, because I'm used to John McClane. So the first two I saw loads of times. And so my perception of John McClane is that fish out of water. So it was slightly puzzling to see him on his home turf, you know, and the fact that obviously the second one, it finishes like him and Holly are all going to work out, and then you see him like straight away, he's, you know, in this terrible place, it seems, been suspended from the force, even though, you know, the captain seems to have a kind of casual view to that. But and then you straight into Harlem with that fucking racist sandwich board that he's got on as well. It's like, what the fuck is going on? And again, it takes like half of the movie before you actually see what the dastardly plan of Simon actually is. So, yeah, I was in on this so much so, Chris, that I did decide to finish off the whole Die Hard series. So I hadn't watched the second two as well. Like the fourth one's mostly with his daughter, and then you get the fifth one with his son in Russia, Jai Courtney, as we established before. So, and I have to say, I think I'm not with you with the second one. I think we disagreed with this when we covered the second one last year. But I don't think the second one is that great a movie. I think the first one is the classic. And having watched them all now, I still hold that first one up as being, you know, the almost perfect action movie that, you know, it stands out ahead of all of the other sequels. But second to that, I think I'd put this one. I think I enjoyed this one a lot more than the second one. It is, obviously, we poked a lot of fun at it. It is a lot of nonsense. I still feel like it's almost two movies glued together. The fact that it was this standalone script and then they just kind of inserted John McClane in it, that makes sense to me. But yeah, I think the action was really good in this. I think the chemistry between Bruce Willis and Samuel L. Jackson is great. Some of the dialogue is a bit clunky. You know, this is early in the 90s, you had all like the LA riots with the Rodney King stuff, didn't you? A lot of racial tension, you know, throughout America at that time. And so some of it where John is accusing Zeus of being racist, I thought it was a bit ham-fisted, to be honest. But yeah, I really enjoyed this one. Having said that, I can't put it quite into Pleasantville, so I'm going to sit with you, I think, in Hill Valley as well. But definitely well worth a watch, and yeah, I enjoyed it way more than I thought I was going to.
Oh, good stuff, mate. Good stuff. Now, Dave, obviously, bear in mind, I've served up a good one for you. I'm fully aware that is your pick for next week. So what are we doing? Because I still don't know what we're doing next week.
Well, Chris, I can't say I'm going to return the favour. And this isn't a kind of hitch up or anything. However, you know, I do have to say it's yeah, this is going to be something a little bit different, Chris. So this, and I don't even know why I'm picking it myself, right? But this is one of those shitty movies that I just ended up, I think, copying off TV, and it might, I don't know whenever it was shown. It's some weird themes in it, so it probably wasn't a Sunday afternoon one. But I've somehow ended up with this thing on tape. And it's a late 90s, so it's a 1989 film. And, yeah, I'm going to be intrigued what you think of it, watching it for the first time. But, Chris, this is the 1989 movie Skin Deep. Now, let's get into the trailer.
I don't know what to say.
Oh, but the Lord is my shepherd.
Meet Zach Hutton.
Darling?
After 10 years of marital bliss, his luck is about to run out.
Come on, Angie, for God's sake.
He's been thrown out, and he's about to discover that being single can be dangerous.
Middle-aged bloke in the mirror there, Chris.
Yeah, know it well. Oh, my word.
How do you feel about that?
You're gonna rip his dick off,
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I've never seen this.
No, I'm not surprised.
I recognize the guy. Oh, yeah.
Now, Zach wants his old life back.
I was about to suggest that we give it another try.
Are you completely off your nut?
And he won't take no for an answer.
This is a bad time.
John Ritter.
What the fuck, Dave?
He's a gag writer! What the fuck?
In a Blake Edwards film.
What?
God, I wish I didn't hate you so much, Zach.
Is this for
Oh my God.
Skin Deep.
This is fucking shit, Dave. What have you been picked here? Oh my God. What the fuck is this? Oh my God. I'm going to remember this for my next fucking pick. You're not getting away with this. What the fuck is that?
It's one of those weird films that I just remember, you know, again, having on the old Scotch taped. And, yeah, it's not a great film. I'll say that straight away. The guy you recognize is John Ritter, so you probably watched Three's Company. And so yes. I was watching that at the time. I used to think it was, you know, funny kind of sitcom. And so it's more like his performance that I think, you know, kind of drew me to the movie. But it's just, yeah, I don't think many people will have seen this, just to be honest. And it is not great. But I kind of want to make you watch it.
Thanks, mate. Thank you. Anyway, on that bombshell, big thank you to everyone as always. If you want to email us, the vhsstrikesback@gmail.com. If you want to follow us on social media, at vhsstrikesback. And a massive thank you to all our patrons. If you do want to support us, please go over to patreon.com/thevhsstrikesback. So the roll call of honor, and a massive thank you to everyone who supported the podcast, past and present, on Patreon. We really appreciate it. Thanks a lot, guys. Is Lee, Helen, Dylan, Stephen, Trent, Dan, Justin, Susan, Timothy, Matt, Heath, Kent, Lucky Lulu Green, Herbs, Jax, Math, Blake, John Hammond, and Mr. Tony Farina. So thank you so much for all your support, guys. We're into 2024. I tried to be nice. Dave's been a bellend and picked an absolute piece of shit. So I'm sorry. Give it a month's time, and I am definitely picking a fucking absolute piece of dog shit for you, David. Don't you worry about that.
You may enjoy it. You may. I don't think you will, but you may do. But anyway, Chris, thank you very much for that, sir. It's good to be back, you know, in 2024. And all I'll say to leave off is, how are you going to finish it off today, Chris?
Well, David, after what you've just shown me, there's only one thing to say, and I really wish you were right in front of me. I would simply say, yippee-ki-yay, you motherfucker. But there you go. See you next time.
Bye now.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over. What the fuck are we going to do now?
What are we going to do? Maybe we could build a fire, sing a couple of songs, huh? Why don't we try that?
We better get back, because it'll be dark soon, and they mostly come at night. Mostly.
I'll be back.
That's odd.
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
Wax on, wax off.
Ah! Ah! Get to the chopper!
One ring to go.
All right. Ding, ding.
Bust you up.
Go for it.
Well, here we go.
Ain't so bad, ain't so bad. Come on, ain't so bad.
Yeah, enough. Come on, you must be crazy or something.
I'm crazy.
You're just a stupid.
Yeah, maybe you're stupid.
You're crazy.
I ain't breathing heavy.
He's a fool. He's stupid.
I've seen you in 6 months.